Welcome to Rise from the Ashes, the podcast channel website that focuses on legal matters that may affect you and your family. On the program, we'll be talking with attorneys, mediators, counselors, and other family law professionals who understand the need to assist families and individuals in resolving the personal and legal issues they may be facing. Rise from the Ashes is sponsored by Mundall Law, who specializes in assisting families and individuals through the legal process with respect, dignity, and caring. Mundall Law is dedicated to helping people to solve their legal problems. You can visit the Mundall Law website at mundalllaw.com or call to schedule a consultation with one of their qualified family law attorneys. Please keep in mind that this podcast is intended only to inform and to assist in understanding legal and personal issues as they relate to family law. Should never be considered as a replacement for a qualified family law attorney. When in doubt, please contact a professional. Rise from the ashes, focusing on matters of the family because family matters. Hello, and welcome to our podcast, Rise from the Ashes. I'm David Braddock, and I'll be your host for the program. We're speaking this time with Susan Mundall, an attorney with Mundall Law, who has about 28 years of experience in the field of family law. For this podcast, we're going to be talking about some of the best reasons to have your divorce settled rather than allowing it to go all the way to trial. We thought a top 10 best reasons to settle instead of going to trial might be a good way to see things a bit more clearly. Before we get to the list, can you give us a brief perspective about what happens when a divorce goes to a trial?
Trials are extremely expensive, David. That's what most people don't realize. Everyone thinks that the best way to do a divorce is to have their day in court. And they think that the court is going to listen to every word they say and then rule in their favor. And this just simply isn't true. It's not true in any case, and especially not in family law cases. It is timely, it is very expensive, and the judges don't like you. They don't want to hear about all of the reasons you can't stand the other person and all the reasons that the court should hate that person too. It's just simply not going to bring you any peace of mind. For all the reasons, the personal reasons, it is so much better to get your matter settled before you go to trial.
All right, thank you. Let's get right to it. Here's the top 10. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Number 10. You don't want to leave the decision-making about your family up to a stranger. And if I may ask, who is the stranger that we're talking about?
Well, ultimately, it's a judge. And judges will tell you, and they frequently have had to tell a number of my clients at early stages, I know nothing about your family, and I'm not going to know very much about your family. And the question the judge will ask you is, do you want the person that knows the least about your family making decisions about what's going to happen to your family for the next 18 years or more?
Okay. And number 9, tomorrow is another day. Is that kind of like look to the future and not the past?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the main point on that is you may be mad today about something that happened, but you need to think about what are going to be the ramifications of remaining mad, and is this going to matter in a year or in 5 years?
So, in other words, your children become adults.
Right. Let me just make the point. If you're being a complete jerk right now in your divorce, when your children get to be adults, are they going to be willing to invite you to their weddings, to their children's graduation, to their children's parties, all of those things? Really, from personal experience, I can tell you that my parents never let us forget about their divorce for 40 years, and it wasn't until our parents died that we finally realized that we were done with their divorce. Please learn from that. And we always had a decision for 40 years. We had to decide who to invite, mom or dad, because neither of them could stand to be in the same room with each other. learn from that experience. Tomorrow is another day.
Very good. Number 8, King Solomon had it right. Remind me, how did that story go again? There were two mothers from the same house. Go ahead.
That's right. One mother, her child had died. Okay. And what had happened is she had accidentally suffocated it. They were laying in the same bed together. And understand that the city was under siege, and so there wasn't a lot of space. And so the remaining baby, both mothers then claimed that the child was theirs. And so they brought it before King Solomon, and his response was, well, cut the baby in two.
So then each mom could have half of a baby.
Right. And you and I both know that that's ridiculous. What you each then have is a dead baby. So, of course, the mother who had already lost her child said, sure, let's do that. Because in her mind, it was better that the other woman not have the baby than for her to allow that child to live. And obviously, the wiser woman, and the one then that Solomon realized was the true mother, was the mother who said, no, give the baby to the other woman because I want my baby alive.
The wisdom of Solomon, that's what he's demonstrating. Obviously testing the limits of the two mothers' sensibility. Number 7, divorce does not eliminate joint debts. Is that really what some people think?
Well, unfortunately, it is. And the thing is that joint debts, those are third parties, all right? So let's talk about a Sears bill.
Okay.
So the Sears bill is in both parties' names, husband and wife. And in the divorce decree, we now have assigned the debt to husband. And so Sears goes and calls wife 2 months later and says, hey, you owe us $9,000 on this Sears bill. And she says, oh, no, it was granted to my husband in the divorce decree. And they will then laugh and say, I'm sorry, but you are still jointly and severally liable for that debt. Because the bottom line is a divorce decree only has force and effect on the two people. And in that case, the only thing that could happen is if Sears sues you, you can sit there and join your ex-husband into the action, but in the end, Sears can get one or both of you to pay. It's only in the family court, then, that you could seek a judgment against your ex-husband for not going and paying the Sears bill. In other words, it's very long and complicated, and so, you know, think about that when you're reaching your agreements.
Sounds like the kind of advice that a good family law lawyer would help people to understand regarding their debts.
Absolutely. When I'm looking at a case, I always find out which debts are joint and which aren't, and we always try and resolve the joint debt so that neither party carries it forward. And I certainly don't want my client in a position where they are assigning debt to the other person and having to depend on that person being honorable and paying off the debt. That's the bottom line.
Okay, and number 6, you can't rewrite history. Whose history are we talking about exactly?
Well, we're talking about the parents, and this is especially important when you're talking about custody and parenting time issues, because the bottom line is that the courts are not going to ignore what the past behavior of a parent was, and they're certainly not going to ignore if there was drug or alcohol abuse or physical violence between the parties. And so if a parent says, I demand to have 50-50 parenting time, and yet their history shows that they were very minimally involved in the raising of their children, don't expect that the courts are going to ignore the history that they already have written.
Okay. And number 5, there is no such thing as a free lunch.
Well, I think that one's kind of funny. Really, the point we're trying to make is that divorce is costly. You entered into a marriage and into a partnership, and that partnership has gone bad, and you've put an awful lot of time and money into that partnership. And so it is going to take a lot of time and money to get out of it. But the important thing is it's also about cut your losses. Think about, how do you want to spend your money? Do you want to spend it going to trial, or do you want to spend it getting something for yourself? Your marriage was a partnership. And in that partnership, you put an awful lot of time and money and energy into it. And so don't think that you're going to get out of it without putting a certain amount of time and money into it. But you can decide how much you want to put into it. And I think the primary thing to remember actually is divorce is about cutting your losses. It really is, you were in a bad partnership, and what can you do to get out of it? Negotiate, negotiate, negotiate.
Okay, and number four, if you think trials are expensive and time-consuming, appeals are even more so.
Right. Let's talk about the cost of appeals, because it's very important, and a lot of people don't take this into consideration. Some people are so caught up in being right that they continue to insist that once the court has not gone in their favor at trial, now they think that they're going to appeal it. Just the filing cost for the appeal is $500. Then you have to pay for the transcripts from the trial. And so if you have a 2 or 3 day trial, you're looking at a transcript that could be anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000. And then there's the thousands of dollars in attorney's fees. What happens is there's a number of requirements. There's formal briefs that have to be filed. There's all kinds of documents. There's oral argument. And then there is just sitting around waiting for another 2 years to have your life decided. It's definitely extremely expensive. The last appeal I did was close to $30,000. Just remember that 70% of the time, the court simply affirms what the trial court had ruled on. And so your chances of winning on appeal are far less. And when I was talking about that $30,000, we were actually the respondents. We did win, but it cost my client an awful lot of money to defend that action.
Yeah, and there's no guarantee that the spouse is going to be ordered to pay the attorney fees necessarily, is there?
No, and in fact, it's very rare for that to happen.
And number three, you can either pay for your own kids to go to college, or you can pay for your lawyer's kids.
Right, and I could use that right now. I've got a daughter in medical school. And so, I mean, putting all kidding aside, is that's just saying, please pay attention to what it's going to cost you. And you can control the cost. Take control of your divorce. Understand from the beginning what the steps are to reach a good, reasonable settlement, then pursue mediation and negotiate a reasonable settlement. Set that as your sights. Know from the beginning what it is you are going to be charged for, and then be responsible in making sure to keep those charges down. You can decide how much time you talk with an attorney. If you want to simply vent, your time would be better spent going into counseling, because counselors are less expensive than attorneys. Those are the things to think about. In the end, I would much rather you pay for your own kids' college than to pay my attorney's fees.
And number two, much of what may be important to you in getting divorced is likely not even admissible evidence for a trial. You got to be kidding me. Is that really true?
Well, you know, divorce in Minnesota is no fault. And so really, the only thing the court needs to know is that there's an irretrievable breakdown of the marriage. If you want to sit there and talk about how your spouse was unfaithful to you and about how they went and they drained all the family's finances and about what an awful person they were, none of that is going to come into the trial. The only time you talk about the other person's personality is how it might affect their parenting style. And that's only if the issue of custody and parenting time is an issue. And in terms of draining the family finances, that would only be relevant if there was money available now to be divided and the person did it in anticipation of a divorce. That would be called dissipation of assets. And again, in terms of really what's important, very little of what I've just talked about is going to sway the court in any way in its decision regarding how the division of property happens and how custody and parenting time happens.
Okay, and we're down to it. The number one best reason to settle your divorce instead of going to trial? It is usually cheaper to buy a new toaster or snowmobile or bass boat than to pay your lawyer to fight for it.
You know, this one is actually really near and dear to my heart. I remember this one person who was really angry with me because there was a microwave oven that I determined was worth $79, and she was so angry that in our negotiations, I suggested that she allow the other side to keep it. The point is don't spend thousands of dollars on attorney's fees to fight for hundreds of dollars of stuff. You need to accurately look at what is the value of your personal property. In fact, I had one case where one side wanted the dog collar and the dog dish. They actually had 3 pages of items such as this. Whoa. And the other side, you know, obviously since the husband, I think, wanted the dog, and so he valued those items at minimal price. The other side then, who wasn't keeping the dog or the dog dish or the dog collar, valued those items at $20 and $30. Here, they were spending thousands of dollars to literally fight over hundreds of dollars of stuff. Don't do it. It's not worth it.
What is the best way for a person then to settle their case?
The best way is that, number one, get a very good, experienced family law attorney and know what your rights are, but also what your areas of negotiation are. That's first and foremost. Second, engage in alternative dispute resolution, mostly mediation or the early neutral evaluation process, and have in your mind that you're going to settle your case there. Really, the majority of cases, there's no reason for them to go to trial. And quite frankly, my personal belief is that people who go to trial hate each other more than they care about anything else. It's just not going to bring you any peace of mind in the end.
All right. Finally, in summing up, what do you recommend for anyone who wants to avoid having their divorce go to a trial?
Get a good, experienced family law attorney. And I'm talking about someone. Ask them, does more than 50% of their practice, is it in family law, doing divorces and custody and parenting time? You do get what you pay for. If you hire someone that is not experienced in that area, they don't know what the law is and they don't know what the case law is, meaning they don't know where the court stands on a lot of these issues. So by getting someone that has experience, you can actually save yourself money. The next thing is get involved in a good mediation. Find experience. There are experienced family law attorneys and financial experts who are very familiar with divorces, and they can assist you in negotiating a reasonable settlement.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you, David.
You are listening to Rise from the Ashes, the podcast channel that takes a careful look at all things having to do with legal procedure within the family law process. Rise from the Ashes is sponsored by Mundahl Law, who specializes in assisting families and individuals through the legal process with respect, dignity, and caring. Mundahl Law is dedicated to helping people to solve their legal problems. You can visit the Mundahl Law website at mundahllaw.com or call to schedule a consultation with one of their qualified family law attorneys. Rise from the ashes, focusing on matters of the family, because family matters.